Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with my friend Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Boy, this is getting good, eh?
Four in a row.
Four-game winning streak for the Edmonton Oilers. Probably remember the last time that happened. I'm guessing that you know.
Yeah, I do. It was right before Christmas last year, the last four games before Christmas. They won them all. I think they were mostly home games. Lucic scored in December 23rd, and McDavid scored, and they beat Montreal 4-1. And that brought them to 17-17-2 on the season. And we all thought this has turned north, and here we go. And then they came back after Christmas, and they stunk.
So they were 17 wins and 19 losses at that point.
Yeah, but they
were
four-game win streak. And things were looking good. They beat the Sharks. They beat the Blues. And anyway, it was the only four-game winning streak last year. So, yeah, in that sense, it's easy to remember. This year it's the fourth three-game winning streak, and they've lost the fourth game each of the other three times. So nice to get over that little hump.
Well, maybe Andre Sekera will come back this year just like he did last year and sink their season.
Oh, man.
That's a nasty thing to say. Sorry, Andre Sekera. He was such a fantastic hockey player.
I watched him tonight.
He's got to be ready.
Did you see his interview?
Yes.
He was on during the first intermission. I saw him tonight, and it's like he's jinxed or something, because I saw the TV and I said, you know, this is a pretty good player to have coming back. You know, the highest paid defenseman on the team that hasn't played a game, and we're, you know, Oilers are still in the hunt. You know, and this guy's still coming back, it's going to be a nice problem to have to figure out where to fit him in. And geez, the very next shift, first shift of the second period, Chris Russell went down the tunnel. And about 5 minutes later, Oscar Klefbom went down the tunnel. And I'm going, geez, they better not interview Sekera anymore, because even talking to the guy, it's like bad stuff starts happening.
Let's hope when he comes back, Bruce, let's hope when Andre Sekera comes back this time that he is completely ready to come back
and not
playing at 40% or whatever it was last year. Of course, the Oilers won 6-4. Mm-hmm. That was a fairly representative score from the scoring chances of the game in the end. As a matter of fact, in terms of grade A chances, the Avs had 13 and the Oilers had 11. And the difference in the game was, again, Mikko Koskinen. At one point, the Avs had given up 10 grade A chances, and five of them were goals, Bruce. And that's what happens to the Oilers, of course, usually, right?
You look at the shot or the goal count, four goals against, and you think, boy, your goalie didn't have a very good night.
Yes.
And he got beat twice late. And, you know, one thing Hitchcock said, which I think might be true, is he said he started playing deep in his net later in the game. He said he was getting tired. And I'm thinking, yeah, a goalie facing 43 shots, and it's his first game ever in the Mile High City. I don't know if they have anything resembling the Mile High City in the KHL. And players do get tired, even goalies. Like, you know, people don't often think a goalie's getting tired, but when the puck is in your end for minutes on end, like it seemed to be tonight, 43 shots against, he needed to be focused for an awful big percentage of that game.
Is there a KHL city in the Ural Mountains, I wonder?
Well, Chelyabinsk is near there.
just going to Google that.
I don't know its altitude. But anyway, it would be that might have been a physical challenge on Koskinen. But truth be told, I'm not sure how much chance he had on those two late goals. Landeskog tap-ins from Rantanen and McKinnon. The three of them. They got 6 points in garbage time, which to me is a pain in the butt, because the guy I'm chasing in my keeper league, he's got all three of those guys, and he got 6 points in garbage time.
So you're right about Chelyabinsk, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Yekaterinburg.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big cities now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he has played at altitude. Ufa? Looks like
it would probably get some altitude. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just speculating. But Hitchcock specifically said he was tired and he started playing deeper in his net. And I think that's probably supported by what we saw as the Oilers hung on desperately in the last 5 minutes to what was a pretty comfortable 6-2 lead up till that point.
Yeah, Koskinen was just so solid in the first period. I mean, he really, the Avs had many more chances than the Oilers early on in that game, and Koskinen just was just a machine in the net, just stopping everything. So good to see.
Good with his glove tonight, his catching glove. He made two or three bare-faced robberies with that trapper tonight.
So this is the two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast, Bruce. What's your good thing?
Well, my good thing is how quickly the Oilers did push back. And they got the 4-goal lead, and then Colorado scored late in the second period. And I just had a nervous feeling that they were going to score some goals, and the no lead seemed like super safe. And Rantanen scored to make it 4-1 after Nuge, and McDavid had scored consecutively for Oilers. And within 41 seconds, Draisaitl comes back and scores for Oilers. So the Oilers' stars dominated the second period to the tune of 4-1. So that gave them a 5-1 lead. And then early in the third, Colorado got a power play goal. And that made it 5-2 right off the bat in the third period. And again, you're going, this could be a long 20 minutes if we're not careful here. And again, Edmonton came right back, this time 1 minute 24 seconds to score on a power play of their own. And that power play, I'm going to give a shout out to two guys that usually are on the receiving end of more criticism than accolade, shall we say. And that is Zach Kassian and Milan Lucic, Sven Andrighetto tripped Kevin Gravel and sent him spilling him into the end boards for a penalty. And both Kassian and Lucic came over and delivered their message, but they delivered in such a way that they didn't take a retaliation penalty. And I'm saying to my TV, I'm saying the way to retaliate with that bugger is to stick the puck in the net, hit him where it hurts in the net. And sure enough, the power play comes through and they score to make it 6-2. And I would submit that was a pretty big goal at the end of the day.
Yeah, Lucic did punch him in the face a little bit, but not hard enough. Not he hard enough. Slug him. Well, you know, he did. He gave him a punch though, Bruce. Like he made contact with his face with his hand.
He did enough to stay out of the box. So I'm going to give him credit.
I will define that as a punch.
Okay.
But you're right. It wasn't.
I just sort of grabbed him by the scruff of the neck, and if there was a little follow through, it wasn't really a punch.
Face wash.
Nurse punched a guy early in the game, got away with it, but that was a different one. Anyway, they kept their cool, and it was, do you think, well, it's 5-2, maybe they're and their teammate just got hurt on a trip, they're going to go after him, but they kept their cool, and it paid off in a power play and a power play goal for the Oilers. So that was those two quick answers. Those two goals wound up being the difference, because Colorado in the end did make it to 4.
Okay, my good thing, Bruce, is Leon Draisaitl's backhand pass, stretch pass to Connor McDavid. And it brought me back to the first time I saw Draisaitl live in Jasper at that rookie tournament, mm-hmm. when he ripped a backhand pass right across the rink. I hadn't seen a pass like that in years. And, you know, Mario Lemieux had that ability to, as I recall, to pass the puck backhand like that. Gretzky was a fantastic backhanded passer. And Draisaitl, for the first time I saw him, he was able to do that. And that pass that he made to McDavid was just sublime. It was such a wonderful, wonderful pass. And I know that I've been a big critic of Draisaitl and McDavid together, mainly because of the impact it has, I think, on the rest of the team. But, man, when they do combine well. And when they do combine well, it's a thing of beauty. And that was I don't know if that's going to be on highlight reels, but that pass was...
They were sure raving about it on the broadcast, and rightfully so. And, you know, you talk about Gretzky being a brilliant backhand passer, and that's certainly so. Best ever passer of any description. But when you're talking about, like, 60 feet hard in the air, landing flat on the tape of the guy hitting the far blue line, You know, I mean, that wasn't like a 10-foot pass or a 20-foot pass like many of the best backhand passes are relatively close range.
It was a stretch pass.
That was a bullet. And right on the tape, like, you know, just inch perfect, really. And McDavid decided not to aim for the goalpost this time, and instead he put one through the five hole. McDavid hit three posts tonight.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. My bad thing, Bruce. Well, it's Oscar Klefbom getting hurt. Oh. And the Oilers have been relatively unscathed by injuries in terms of their key players. I mean, they've lost Reeder and Kujula, but they have other wingers who are at a similar level, I think, generally speaking. I mean, how much drop off when you put in Puljujärvi and Kara or Chase on as opposed to or Ratty? So, but this obviously is going to hurt a lot.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, we'll see how it goes. I mean, here's Bruce, where all the, here's where you love having Chris Russell on the team. You need a left defenseman now on the top four. Well, you have Darnell Nurse and Chris Russell. And it's going to be up to, and this is going to be a huge moment for Matt Benning, because obviously he's going to be asked to step up into the top four. I don't see any other alternative, although Kevin Gravel has been.
I do. Great. I think Gravel is right in the conversation.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it'll be Russ. Could they possibly go on a second pairing with Russell and Gravel?
Or go Larson and Gravel and keep Russell and Nurse together.
That's a possibility. I hadn't thought of that. Because Kevin Gravel is just, he was just great. I thought that game, he was really strong. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I mean, it sounds like it's a broken bone in the hand. Is that the consensus
well,
here?
Well, it was a slap shot from the point, and it hit his hand that was gripping his stick, and it hit him in the fingers. And as soon as I saw it, I went, that's a broken finger. But, you know,
here's the good news. He can keep working out. He can keep in good shape with a bad hand. You can keep skating. You can keep in great condition. So when he does come back, he'll be going on all cylinders. And this, it could be, what, a month?
Hitchcock said weeks, not days. And that was as specific as he wanted.
Yeah. That's my bad thing. Bad thing, though. I mean, your defenseman is just the minute muncher and has been playing very well. And, man, playing those tough minutes, defensemen can get eaten alive. And both Klefbom and Larson had been playing very, very well this year. And Chris Russell. Those three guys have been absolute horses for the Oilers. And getting the job done, and they're really going to miss Oscar Klefbom. So that's my bad thing. What's yours?
My bad thing is going to be the play of the fourth line. For some reason, Kevin Quinn kept referring to the Brodziak line with Kara, tonight Kara and Cassian as the fourth line, but it wasn't even close. Like they played, Brodziak played 20 minutes and 35 seconds tonight, 20 minutes, Kyle Brodziak. And Cassian played 16 and a half minutes. Kara played 16 minutes. And the true fourth line of Ratty, 520. Spooner, 537, and Zikov, 442. And my issue with them was they weren't good minutes. And those guys made two major mistakes of turnovers and things that just shouldn't have happened. One of them was right after the 2-0 goal, just when it seemed the Oilers had consolidated the game, they go out for a fourth line shift. And they bring the puck into the zone. Ratty goes into the corner. Zikov gets the puck on the wing, and he decides he's going to pass the puck back.
I saw that.
Spooner.
What a terrible play that was.
He blows the pass. So first of all, he makes a bad decision and then bad execution. That combination will kill you time after time. Just can't have both things, right? And make a bad decision, you better make the play, is my take. And he didn't. And the trouble was that Colorado came steaming up the ice, and all three Edmonton forwards were trapped deep behind the play. And it's a wide open three on the fourth line. That is the one thing they just cannot allow. They just can't let that happen on their watch. Their first job is to look after business, have at least one guy in position. And when they're all going in the zone, you better not be trying fancy passes and missing them, because then trouble is next door and coming fast. And then there was one later in the same period because the puck was at the other end. And a loose puck squibbed out into the slot, and it was there for Spooner to take, and he just didn't recognize it, or he overskated it, or just nothing happened. And the puck stayed in Edmonton's zone for another, seemed like 10 hours. Because Colorado, boy, can they ever cycle the puck. And those guys, I think that time they were caught out against the big line. When you do get that chance to clear the puck, and it's already, you know, quite a few seconds into your shift, Spooner had a clear path to center, dump, change. I mean, that was the whole play. And if he can't do that, I'm not sure there's a spot for him on the team. And again, you know, so the fourth line was, and because of those two plays, I would imagine Hitchcock was not in a very giving mood when it came to ice time in the third period. Normally you think garbage time, roll the four lines. But those guys, like I say, they played around 5 minutes each.
We've seen Spooner for some time now, Bruce. And man, do I ever prefer Ryan Strome's game. I'm not seeing it much at all. Yeah, he Ryan Strome was effective defensively, could kill penalties. He helped the team in that regard, and I'm not we're yet to see Spooner help the team hardly at all. Bruce, let's move on to the numbers section, and I was gonna go with Larson's time on ice, 28 minutes and change, but I'm gonna change my number to 98. And I'm not talking about Jesse Puljujärvi here. I'm talking about Leon Draisaitl's projected points at this point in the season. He's got 37 and 31 games. That projects to 98 points this year, Bruce, if he can keep up that rate. So, not bad. Not bad at all.
He's on a roll, and he got one tonight and a pair of helpers. And the one he got wasn't your standard quick shot from the slot off his sweet feed. It was getting caught out on a line change with a couple of grinders and getting involved in the grinding. And when they dug the puck out for him, he himself dug it out of the goalie's pads, pulled it off to the side and slotted it home. Classic garbage goal that you'd expect a third or fourth liner to get, but they worked just as well for Draisaitl. But it's nice to see him go in there and slug it out himself and make the finish. And of course, you described the one assist that he got. And the other one on the power play in the third period, where he also got dangerously close to the netminder on the point shot that beat him. And sort of kind of a little bit bumped him. And the Oilers in the Ken Hitchcock era are doing a whole lot better on video reviews. Let's put it that way.
I think they thought that the goalie had time to recover. Maybe. And make the save, although it was fairly close, but I think that might have been what they were thinking. I mean, there was, and he didn't really slew foot him. He really didn't get the foot. He just bumped him.
He tapped his glove on the way,
but yeah, so it would have been
interference. But he, you know, the timing was such they could have called it back, and you'd have to say, well, it wasn't like a clear cut 100-0 decision. It could have gone against the Oilers, and it didn't. They're actually on a little roll in that department these days. So yeah. Leon got his points tonight, and he got them by grinding, and he got them by finesse and skill. He also made an absolutely fantastic play, David, on the penalty kill, where he knocked a puck down in Colorado zone, did the old spin around on the backhand, and found Nuge steaming down the middle for a clear shot for the hat trick.
Oh, yeah, wasn't that a fantastic play? Yeah, it was a beautiful play. I thought Nuge was going to get another one.
By Leon again. The thing about Leon is you can watch him every night and you can find stuff to criticize. He looks sluggish. He looks a little bit tentative at times, like he's picking his spots a little bit. But you know what? When you're playing 24 minutes and 33 seconds like he did tonight, as a forward, you got to play the old rocking chair game a little bit. I mean, that's what they used to praise and still praise, you know, the Minute Munchers, Drew Doughty and Ryan Suter and Chris Pronger in the past. I play 28, 29 minutes. And the way to do it is you can't play all out for the entire time. You just can't do it. And so you got to pick your spots. And Leon picked his spots well enough tonight to put 3 points on the board, make some very fine plays. And you have to see the bad plays, but you also have to see the good plays. And I fear there are fans in both camps that only see the stuff he does right, or very many people that seem to only see the stuff he does wrong or only comment about the stuff he does wrong. And there's just so many gems in there in between that
I've never
overpower the mistakes over time. Like he's a beauty player, I think.
I've never understood the crowd that doesn't like doesn't root for him, doesn't seem to like
money,
him.
David. He makes too much money.
Oh, God, that is such a pathetic.
There's always a guy like that. He's overpaid, therefore.
It was before then, Bruce. It started before then. There was a whole group of people who've always thought Nuge was a better player than Draisaitl, and they should trade Draisaitl, you know, keep Hall, keep Nuge, and trade Draisaitl away, get something, trade Nurse away. And I've never fathomed it. And I don't know why they've been so anxious to try to trade Draisaitl. It just never made sense to me. He's a big center, Bruce. And in the playoffs, this guy, he was a killer in the last playoffs. He's going to be a killer in the playoffs again. It never made any sense to me. I don't get it. And maybe it's based on some kind of statistical analysis that I don't pay attention to. And
there's a camp that says Leon should be driving his own line down because that's the way that that it should be. And the way that he's being paid to be a center and he's not a center and he's freeloading off of McDavid's passes. And Hitchcock came out. And, of course, Hitchcock's the second coach in a row that's decided to use Draisaitl on the wing. And he said the reason that they have the luxury of using Draisaitl on the wing is because Nuge is playing so well at center. Well, great. That's good.
Playing well at center. He's
be working all right, you know?
Yeah. I like that line. And the Nuge, Juge, Pooge. line. Yeah. You name Bruce.
They switched out tonight. They put Luchichip on that line and they moved Kara down a line.
So now and it worked. It actually worked.
Luge.
So anyway, they're all good players and I have no trouble rooting for all of them, including Draisaitl. What's your number, Bruce?
Well, I have a row of numbers. It's from the event summary. And examined in isolation, this set of numbers looks like an absolutely fantastic game. Darnell Nurse, one goal, one assist, 2 points, plus two. No penalties. It's the only blank spot on the entire sheet instead of other than faceoffs, which, of course, he's a D-man. 30 minutes. And 44 seconds, 3 minutes on the power play, 3:05 on shorthanded, and a team leading 24-39 at even strength. That's a lot of work. He had 6 shots on net, 4 more that were blocked, and 2 others that missed the net. 12 shot attempts. That's way up in Oscar Klefbom on a big night territory. 1 hit, 1 giveaway, 2 takeaways, and 3 block shots. I mean, that's just a staggering number of statistics, like numbers. Events for one defenseman to be involved in one game, and 30 minutes. I mean, wowza! So he really put in the time. And that said, qualitatively, he had some very difficult moments in this game, and I think his scoring chances probably caught that.
Yeah, 4 major mistakes on scoring chances against at even strength, which is a really high number. I mean, he did play 30 minutes. I mean, with the run and gun NHL of today. And man, the Avs are certainly that team that can dominate. That Girard, he's a good player, eh? I was really impressed with him and Tyson Berry. They've got some defensemen who can really move the puck. I wish the Oilers had just one guy like that, little dude that could really wheel. Anyway, you might expect 2 major mistakes on a scoring chance against if you're a top 4 D-man in a game. Something in there between 1 and 2 might be acceptable, but 4 is a little high. And this is going to be a huge challenge for Nurse with Klefbom out. He's really going to have to step up and raise his game and make better decisions out there. He's fully capable, I think, of doing it. It just seems almost like a concentration issue. He and McDavid again were caught. There was a pass out to the slot where they're, you know, either side of the net and no one's taken the slot. They're both, it's kind of hard to tell on those plays. And like, who's really at fault. I guess I just blame both of them. Yeah. Someone's got to do it. And Colorado had a grade A chance there. So Nurse has got to eliminate those wide open looks he's giving to opposing teams in front of the net. And he got beat on the rush once by, he was a little lazy almost, and Rantanen beat him down the ice, I think it was, or was it McKinnon? Got a nice shot, or was it Landeskog? Anyway, one of them. And there was a couple others, and he's just got to do better. But I think we'll see. I mean, he's had some really good runs of games in the past. I think he's been in a defensive slump. And that's the interesting thing about, you know, keeping these scoring chance stats, Bruce, is I start to see that Everyone's really aware of offensive slumps that players go into, but they also go into defensive slumps.
Right.
And Nurse has been in one for about 10 games, maybe 15.
That matches with what this eye has seen. And, I mean, tonight, your favorite stats, Corsi. Nurse was on the ice for 18 Oilers shot attempts, 35 Colorado shot attempts. Fenwick 14 to 27 shots on goal, 9 to 17, like 1-4-2 against in every category, right across the board, except one. He was on for 2 goals for and 0 against. So everything worked out in the end.
But the abs just really buzz in the offensive zone. That was an impressive display. And
top line, eh?
I mean, I won't. It's hard to really believe in the Oilers, Bruce, because right now they're riding the two goalies have really carried them, in McDavid and a few other players. And until the Oilers can start to do what the Avs did in that game, which is to put on sustained offensive zone pressure, you just wonder. I still wonder. I know that they're just on this great run of trending upwards with Hitchcock as coach. And I'm sure glad that they made the change and they're getting the second opinion and seeing how this team can do under another coach. And a number of players are doing a lot better. But I'd still like a little see a little bit more separation between the Oilers and their opposition in their wins, because these games, I haven't done the scoring chance numbers like what they were under Hitch and McClellan, but I don't think they've improved actually the differential since Hitch has been coach. Mm-hmm. I still think they're very close. You know, I think they were actually pretty good positive territory under McClellan. They just didn't get the goaltending. So we'll see how this all plays out. It's going to be a very interesting rest of the season, but at least we're in the game here. The despair that was starting to descend on all of us Oilers fans has been lifted. And what's the record now? As
2-1 under Hitchcock.
And the overall record is how many wins?
17 out of 31. That's well over.
That's really sweet. That's just fantastic.
17-12-2 now.
Wow.
So now it's a matter of surviving, finding a way to survive without Klefbom for a while.
Every team's got to do it, and every good team.
Oh, I know, but I mean, that's like, it's not, in terms of ice time, it's like Minnesota losing Suter or LA losing Doughty. Like, everyone's got to take on extra minutes, extra responsibility, and some guy's got to come in and fill the void, you know, whether it's Jason Garrison or Chris Weidman, you know. Compare those guys to Oscar Klefbom, and there's a big, vast gulf in between them. And that's what the team is going to have to cover off.
Well, Chris Weidman can only trend up as an Oiler because he's starting really low. He's been on the ice twice. I think he's had two shifts and caused goals on both of them, as far as I can tell. Hey, Bruce, before we end up, I want to ask you about the Andrew Ferentz comments, because I haven't heard your opinion. I maybe you've been on Twitter talking about it, but I've written a post, or I've now written a couple posts about it, so people can read what I think. But what do you think? What do you make of it all? And Nuge went in tonight too, of course.
Yeah, well, he did, and I kind of think Ferentz is a bit out of line, frankly, to be yapping at this stage about guys that are still on the team.
Just one guy.
Two guys, Klefbom and Nuge were both on that team.
Okay.
And you know, the Oilers,
they gave Ferentz
a nice retirement contract, 4 years, $13 million. The last 2 years he barely played. The last year he didn't play at all. They paid him, no problem. Insurance paid him, whatever, you know. His career was done. He didn't do particularly well in the 2 years he played. And I give him credit for at least admitting that he wasn't himself a difference maker. But it seemed just a little bit gratuitous. And what's it going to solve? And the thing about, you can say, well, he didn't name names, but the trouble about not naming names is then guys like Nuge are, you know, who is he talking about? Who isn't he talking about? And that basically tars them all with some brush. And
that's a very good point that he didn't, that's exactly what happens when you don't name names. Of course, we all, you know, the general assumption, I mean, Bob Stauffer noters now, everyone knows who they're talking about. Bob was saying, it's like Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle here, I think. And everyone knows who Ferentz was talking about. Hall being the dominant player on the team. You know, the only I think I don't I like what I think I, he was asked a question and he gave it.
He could have been talking about any number of
possibly. I don't think so. Not with Hall's dominant kind of personality on that team. And Bruce, what point was I going to make here? I lost my train of thought there, man.
Well, I got one more while they're recovering it. Ferentz made a very, very weird and specific reference to the team losing 6-1 in game 3. You know, after, you know, saying all the right things in the off season, then he said, then you get to game 3 and we're losing 6-1. And the boys are going out drinking after the game. And then he made a reference to the nightlife in Edmonton. Well, you know, in Dallas Eakin's second year, the Oilers did in fact lose game 3 by a score of 6-1. It was to the LA Kings. It was at LA. And it was, the season was already getting off the rails. And they went out to LA and Nuge was sick and they put Bogdan Yakimov in to play his only NHL game. He'd just come to North America. And on defense, that was the year that Akins, the coach that Ferentz praised over and over again, went all the way through training camp and into the season with 8 defensemen because he couldn't decide which ones he wanted. And in LA against the Stanley Cup champions that constantly dominated the Oilers for years, he press boxed Jeff Petrie and Oscar Klefbom, and he went with Darnell Nurse, 19 years old, his first NHL game, threw him to the Wolves against the LA Kings. Used Brad Hunt, 6th NHL game. And the rest of his defense was guys like Ferentz, Fane, Nikitin, and Justin Schultz. Well, how do you suppose that six-pack did against the LA Kings? Well, I'll tell you how they did. 6-1. And do you blame him for going out drinking after that game? I mean,
yeah, that was the least convincing part.
I don't think they did because they played the very next night in Arizona, so they would have been on a plane that night. But anyway, so he probably was getting his occasions mixed up a little bit. But fact-checking that 6-1 game 3, maybe there's a reason that players are going, boy, I don't think we got what it takes this year, because the Kings just made mincemeat of it.
That was the least convincing part of what Ferentz had to say, was his praise for Dallas Eakins. I mean, who knows? But, you know, Bruce, I put a lot of weight in Ferentz, what he has to say. Is that I think he's a fairly, in terms of he was there. Mm-hmm. I think he's a credible narrator of what happened. He's coming from Boston. He knows what a functional team, a winning team, a serious team looks like. He sees the difference, and he's just telling us. He's asked a direct question by Elliot Friedman, and he gives a candid answer and an honest
one. Well, I'll give him credit for candid answers, which is something he's always done.
There's no upside. He's mad about the situation years later, about the squandering of what he thinks of ability of some of these players, and letting down the team. And I don't have a problem with him telling the truth, what he sees as the truth. Other people can disagree, like Nuge did today. That's fine too. I don't think he's making stuff up, or he saw something. He's speaking. Mm-hmm. Now you can criticize him, as you did, for not going far enough to name names, but that would have opened up another can of worms than people. But here's what I was going to say. The reason this is such a hot button issue, and it truly is, I mean, Twitter was just, it's on fire. It exploded. Everyone talking about this. It's the topic of the last 2 days, and it's political, Bruce. It's because, of course, the Hall trade is still, if there's another reason for the Hall trade, if it's just not a hockey trade, if there was a reason to change the culture and move players out, and the Eberle trade, this gives some justification, perhaps, for Shirelli to make such a deal. And lets him off the hook somewhat. And people don't want that to happen. A lot of people, they want to see Shirelli fired. And then other people want to give Shirelli the benefit of the doubt. Shirelli has his fans.
Including Andrew Ferentz, in my opinion. Like, I think what he said was very pro Shirelli.
So there you go. So this is the elephant in the room of this discussion. It's not just, well, did they party or not on that team? And it's like, you know, kind of whether that happened or not. It's about Shirelli's trade of Taylor Hall and whether that was the right move or the wrong move. And that's why it's this thing is so darn heated, and it's going to continue to be heated until
the end of time.
Till the end of time.
I've given up hope. I think we're coming up to day 900 since the trade. I'm pretty sure I read something about that damn trade in all 900 of those days. And there's a lot of people that just cannot let it go. And I mean, it's important. I get that. But revisiting it and relitigating it and relitigating it some more over and over again and going around all around the mulberry bush, like, what are we accomplishing? You know, let's talk about the team that we got.
Oh, your dog went away. What's
happening now? Hmm?
Yeah, I saw your little dog was scratching at the door at the bottom of the screen there.
That's the cat now.
Was that the cat?
Yeah.
It looked like a dog.
Yeah.
How big is your dog?
She's a schnoodle. She's only about 15 pounds, probably less now that she's so old.
The cat is back.
There she is. Right out in the middle of it.
Is that a cat?
That's a cat.
Okay.
She's a Tonkinese, so it's part Siamese, part Burmese. So they got the dark points and the beige coloring otherwise.
Looks like a very nice cat.
She's very pretty. She's weird.
Siamese cats, Bruce, are weird. I've had them. And
we adopted her late in life. Like she was 12 when we got her, and she's now 17. And she turned into a very entertaining cat.
Yeah, well, I hopefully with the Oilers winning, we'll move off this whole thing again until the next explosion of whatever. No. It'll never go away. You're right. It'll never go away. Oh, man. We'll be fuming and fulminating.
I'm hoping that once Chiarelli is finally done here, however he goes out, that at least that'll turn the page on it being a constant re-judgment of the guy in charge of the team. And of course, the armchair GMs, many of them think they could do a better job than the GM, and maybe they could. I mean, I'm not going to say otherwise. I am saying that sometimes they're operating with less than the full amount of information.
Yes, and this, to me, this was a little bit more information, and people will put different weight on it. And the funny thing is, of course, it won't change anybody's mind because everyone's made up their mind, pretty much. I shouldn't say everyone. Most people have pretty strong opinions about that trade, and a little bit more information is not going to push them in one direction or the other.
No, one side is going to say Trump is a felon, and the other side says, see, this new information proves that he had nothing to do with any of it. And it just opinions harden no matter what, you know, and that's one of the things of the social media era that I've really noticed is that this polarization.
It's so tedious, isn't it?
The political analogy that I just made, it's very real and constant. But I wish it wouldn't carry over to such an extreme in sort of daily life. We're talking about...
Well, on Twitter, Bruce, I've muted the word... On Twitter, I've muted the word Trump, so I don't see tweets with Donald Trump.
Maybe
I'll have to mute the word Tater Hall. Yeah. Except it's part of my job to write about this stuff, and I'm also acutely interested in it. So I'm as bad as anyone. I'm in terms of keeping it alive. So I write about it all the time whenever I have a chance.
Yeah, that's true. You are.
It's of interest. It's of interest to me, and I find it. We're pretty comprehensive at the Cult of Hockey. Completists. Completist. We are completists, Bruce. We like to have everything covered. You know, every little scrap we want to detail. That's just my nature and your nature, I think, too.
Yeah. Well, you can look after the scraps and the scrums. And I used to want to play hockey. Remember Rod Phillips and that line about the Swedes? I used to want to play hockey. He used to say that about Winnipeg Jets. Pekka Rautakallio, guys of that era.
He was Finnish, Pekka Rautakallio.
Yes, he was. That's our mandatory 70s sports reference.
Oh, but here's another one, Bruce. Okay, who was known as the Finnish Bobby Orr in the 1970s?
Finnish Bobby Orr? Wow.
I might be wrong about this, but I'm...
Lars Erik Sjöberg is sort of the
this is the Finnish.
Sorry. Yeah. Now I'm really mixed up.
Pekka.
Finish.
Pekka Marjamäki.
Oh yeah. Okay.
You'll have to take my word for it, and maybe I'm wrong. All right, let's leave it there, Bruce.
Yep, I think we've taken it as far as we can take it tonight. We've reached the end of the internet.
That's where Pekka Marjamäki lives.
Exactly.
With a sauna. Okay, thanks for talking tonight.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Good luck, Oscar.
And in the meantime, and in between times, it's been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast. I screwed that up.